Shrink Wrap Radio number 326, an overview of body psychotherapy with Dr. Michael Heller.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Dr. Michael C. Heller, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show. What's the weather like there in Switzerland? As you probably know, we're having big storms from Hurricane Sandy on the East Coast. What's it like there in Switzerland for you?
Well, we had small snowy storm, but nothing dramatic. It's just early in the season for so much snow, and it's a bit cold.
Yes. Now, one of the things I notice is that you have dual citizenship in the U.S. and Switzerland. How did that come about?
Well, both my parents were, because they're dead now, were U.S. citizens, but they lived in France. My father worked in Paris, and so I was raised in Paris, and then I studied in Switzerland, and somehow I've always stayed there.
Wow, what an interesting background. And, you know, my first reaction when I saw that you had a book on body psychotherapy, and of course, I'm located in California and was here in the height of interest in body approaches to psychotherapy during the late 60s and during the 70s. And I thought, what's this guy in Switzerland doing writing about this? But you've written a very authoritative book. Very complete, very encyclopedic, I would say. And you mention that it's intended really as a textbook. So you have written this new book. It's for my listeners, it's titled Body Psychotherapy, History, Concepts, Methods. And it's 842 pages in length, so it is quite encyclopedic. Did you have any idea it would be so long when you set out to write it?
Well, actually, it's about 600 pages of text, and then all the rest is footnotes, references, additional information. But I was asked to write a book that would be about 600 pages.
Okay.
By the original Belgium editor, who is De Beck.
Okay. Well, I must say it's quite an ambitious project. And I think Peter A. Levine nailed it in the quote that's on the front cover of the book when he says, "Unquestionably, the Bible of body-oriented psychotherapy." Now, that must have made you happy.
Yes, I was very proud of that. Yeah. Especially, he's not even a close friend or anything, so it was a great honor.
Oh, yes, all the better then. So who did you have in mind as your audience when you wrote this book?
Well, my first audience was my colleagues, students in body psychotherapy, but also, in the 60s and 70s, when I was a student, there were a lot of books for what you would call uninformed intellectuals. That is, people who like to know things they haven't studied and would want to have detailed and in-depth information on the subject written in a way that they can understand it, even if they haven't had a specialized training.
Yes.
So it's, and then there's all the academic colleagues like psychiatrists, psychologists, biologists who are interested in issues on body and mind and who would like to know how body psychotherapists approach that issue.
Okay. Well, let's back up just a bit and let me ask you, when and how did you first become interested in body psychotherapy?
Well, it was I was 25 years old then. And most students of my periods, I was studying psychology with Jean Piaget, who's a famous Swiss psychologist, developmental psychologist. And in those days, it was fashionable that we would do a psychoanalysis. And also, because we were in the early 70s, meditation. So I started meditating, and I loved theater, so I was doing some theater too. So I started doing all those things. And my psychoanalyst told me I wasn't really done for. I wasn't reacting positively to psychoanalysis, and he advised me to do some buddy psychotherapy groups, which I did. And there, I experienced things that were very important for me, and I got involved in the field.
Well, I think we're of a similar generation, because I know during that same period I had very similar sets of interests. And it's interesting that a psychoanalyst would have steered you in that direction. It certainly doesn't fit the stereotype, at least that we used to have, of psychoanalysts. Now, I suppose we should back up even a little bit further, because we started talking about body psychotherapy, as if everybody knows what we're talking about. So I should probably ask you, not in a 600-page answer, but more briefly, what is body psychotherapy?
So at a very general level, it's any form of psychotherapy that integrates body techniques at the level of techniques and theories and ways of approaching people. You're not just listening to words, you're seeing people, reacting to smell, to movements, and to gestures. And I would say that for the moment we can distinguish two main groups of body psychotherapy which have two different type of goals. A first trend, which is the one born in California in the 1970s, as part of humanistic psychology.
Yes.
It really wants to enhance, I would say, the psychological comfort of citizens. It doesn't really want to focus on psychopathology. Mm-hmm. And today, this trend is also often integrated in what we call now coaching techniques. And this trend was strongly influenced by the Reichian movement.
Yes.
And then there's a second trend which focused more strictly on therapeutic goals, which is to say the development of methods that support specific psychopathological difficulties. For example, Alexander Lowen, if you recall, wrote books on how to use his bioenergetics on depressive patients, schizoid patients, people with loss of identity, and so on. So this is what I really call body psychotherapy. It's when it aims at relieving psychopathology.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a useful distinction. I appreciate that. Now, I believe you take a systems approach to understanding mind and body. So perhaps you can give us a bit of an overview of the systems view that you've developed.
Mm-hmm. So in my training with Piaget, we used an approach called structuralism. Today, if I talk of structuralism, people will run away because they probably would be afraid. So I transformed his structuralism in something close to current systemic approaches. And to do this, I approach the individual as a global organism, and I use a model called the System of Dimensions of the Organism, or the SOD for short. And in this model, I divide the global organism in five main dimensions. And each of these dimensions has a crucial adaptive function for the organism. So the first dimension is the body. And the body is here defined as all the parts of the organism that need to deal with gravity. So everything which is related to posture, to movement, to coordination of segments would be what I call the body. I need to be that specific because, as you know, the body can mean anything. It can mean the whole organism. It can mean physiology. It can mean, for physicians, it can be any object in the world. So for body, when we want to understand what we mean by body psychotherapy, we're talking of that very specific body, which is related to gravity phenomena.
Yes, okay.
Then we have behavior, and behavior is how the organism relates to objects in his environment. Then we have metabolism, which is the metabolic energy of the organism, and this organizes the vitality an individual has at his disposal. And finally, there's the psychological dynamics, which help an organism to integrate itself in cultural, social, and institutional dynamics by using tools and medias. And these four dimensions have different requirements and procedure. They can't just connect together, so they need a sort of interface, which is what I call global organismic regulation systems, which are basically physiological, like breathing, cardiovascular system, hormonal system, homeostasis. And it's in this big connector of the dimensions that I situate the affects.
Yeah. Well, you really bit off so much. I mean, you're basically writing about mind and body and how the two interact and what the relevance would be for various therapeutic approaches. You even go back into history and cover a lot of history, going all the way back to the Greeks and so on. So it's a lot more than we can cover here. And as I say, very ambitious of you to bite all that off. And at the same time, there's quite a bit of specific detail and very specific history that really brings us right up into our own time. Trying to wrap my head around all this, I tried to categorize body therapies from kind of what I was reading in your book and my own understanding. And I came up with four somewhat overlapping categories. One, approaches that attempt to create greater awareness of one's own body. And I think maybe that relates to what you, when you divided it into two and you talked about something for the general public and the human potential movement. And so I think that one approaches to create greater awareness of one's own body maybe fits in there. Then two, approaches that focus on postural aspects of the body, and I'm thinking of Rolfing and maybe other approaches similar to that. Three, approaches that focus on what the body is communicating nonverbally, and you've got quite a bit of history on that. And four, approaches that involve various kinds of physical touch or manipulation by the therapist. How is that scheme for a very broad kind of take on the field?
Well, it doesn't work for me, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
The reason here is, in a way, you would define, if I use that list, mm-hmm. you could define body psychotherapists as classical psychotherapy plus body techniques. Okay. What you describe is, I would call body-mind work, not psychotherapeutic.
Okay.
When we do psychotherapy, we are working on the fact, in body psychotherapy, that the mind is a cogwheel of the whole organism. It has different ways of connecting itself to the body. And therefore, by working on the body, you can stimulate those connections and through them stimulate certain parts of the mind. So we're using posture and awareness and massage, and actually we explore what happens within a gesture or the quality of a movement or body sensations. But what we have in mind is not what we typically call body-mind techniques. We're looking for old memories, for changing ways of thinking, for changing cognitive patterns, emotional patterns, behavioral patterns, by finding new ways of connecting consciousness to the whole organism.
Okay, well, are there specific body psychotherapies that come to mind? What are the main body psychotherapies that are being practiced today?
Well, the field is really changing all the time.
Yes.
You have the good old bricks, if I could say, like bioenergetics.
Yes.
In the States is very well known. Biosynthesis in Europe is very well known. Core energetics, for example, is well known in the States. Biodynamic psychology is well known. And so we can have a list of what I call the old Reichian schools.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have in common is that they're really integrating an approach of the organism to psychotherapy.
Okay.
But today, there's less and less people using those methods because there's a wide range of completely new methods which, in a way, turn their back onto Reich. They're just considering that the mind is part of the organism and it can be approached through the body, through the behavior, through the breathing, through nonverbal communication, and that the, as soon as you start considering body psychotherapy from that very large angle, then actually what people have observed is that they need to nearly redefine everything. So Peter, like Peter Levine, you've just mentioned, or Pat Odgen, they're really looking for new forms of psychology, new ways of working with the body, new ways of integrating breathing patterns, which are very different from what you could find in the old schools.
Are there names of specific approaches that have emerged, or does it tend to be more of kind of a free form thing that is idiosyncratic to different therapists?
No, there are a lot of of names that can produce. You tell me when I produce too many. That's more the problem. But for example, as I've just said, you have what we call trauma therapy centered therapies.
Yes.
Peter Levine, somatic experiencing, Babette Rothschild, somatic trauma therapy. EMDR, in a way, can be considered as a body psychotherapy too.
Yes.
And then you have more global approaches. I mean, those are very specific approaches. You have more global psychotherapeutic approaches like the sensory motor psychotherapy system founded by Pat Odgen and Kikuni Minton. You have the Pestle-Boyden system, psychotherapy. Then there is Christine Corwell's moving body psychotherapy, which is particular in the sense that, A, it includes dance therapy techniques. Mm-hmm. As she's an academic psychology teacher, she also includes current academic psychological knowledge. And she is part of a whole new trend, which is today mixing up neurosciences, meditation, mindfulness and things like that, nonverbal communication, psychophysiology, behavioral therapy, cognitive therapy. And for example, some are developing that to work on infants and families. Like in France, George Downing, and in San Francisco, Mark Ludwig, they collaborate, for example, with Ed Tronick in Harvard and Beatrice Beebe in Columbia University, who are important specialists on the behavior of infants and their parents. And they're trying to connect this new form of knowledge with the old knowledge that was developed in body psychotherapy. And a last example, maybe, which is also pretty famous, is what happens at the Boston Trauma Center, where Bessel van der Kolk is approaching post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, by including a lot of body psychotherapists in the treatment of the patients, but as part of the team, a team that uses several methods.
Well, this is really fascinating. That's a great overview that you've just given us, and you're creating a list of people that I'm going to have to interview. For example, you mentioned Beebe, and there's someone who's just written a book about her work, the same publisher who's published your book in this country. And I think the author's name is Judith Rustin.
Yeah,
she's working on memory.
She's part of the same team, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be backing up what you're telling me with some input from her as well, I expect, down the line. Now, one of the things that you touch upon is the impact of Eastern approaches on today's focus on the body. Maybe you might want to say just a little bit about that.
I've been thinking a lot about it because the whole, in the last 50 years, the economical situation of Asia has changed so much that the whole intellectual context of the East-West debate has completely changed. When I was a student, it was post-colonial periods, and everything that came from Asia was folkloric, human, non-respectable. But you can't tell to the modern China and modern India, who are leading technological and scientific and economical powers, that their knowledge is just rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
And today, psychologists have stopped trying to excuse themselves for finding so many interesting things in Buddhism and so on.
Yeah.
And in fact, if there's one domain where Asia has always been superior to Europe and science and sciences that exist in the States, is actually in body-mind techniques. The European methods were created in the 18th century by Per Henrik Ling, who founded Swedish gymnastics and orthopedics. And he went all over Asia to study there. And then he came back to Europe and blended what he had learned there with anatomy and physiology.
So there was still an Asian influence even going way back then.
It was major. It wasn't just, I mean, all came from Asia, and you added a bit of science to it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All the modern techniques in this field have done that, and most of the main physiotherapy, body therapists, and orthopedic medical doctors and psychiatrists, they still do yoga if they want to learn, or Tai Chi or something like that.
Yes.
Now, so after physioanatomy, physiology, and mechanics, the second, I think, big innovation in the field was body psychotherapy. And the reason why I say that is because until then, nobody studied the spontaneous dynamics of how affects, thoughts, and body associate with each other. Before that, even in Asia, you only studied sort of pre-prepared exercises. And when I, for example, gave courses in Japan, they were, you know, I thought I was in front of people who knew much more than me. There was acupuncturists and yoga teachers and Tai Chi teachers among the people I was teaching to. And I realized that they don't really know how to deal with the emotions, automatic thinking, and free associations. So in this sense, I think body psychotherapy is changing something in depth in the whole field of the mind-body business. So what I would generally, to conclude, say is that between body-mind traditions and science has a long future before we find a sort of common ground.
Yes. And so not only do we have the influence coming from the East, but also I think there's been an impact of neo-psychoanalytic insights, for example, attachment theory, object relations, and so on, bearing on the kind of both cognitive and emotional life that you've been alluding to. And then all of the information that's coming to us about the brain from the neuroscientists.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see those two streams very much contributing to this emerging field of body psychotherapy as it's taking place today?
We're all reading neurosciences.
Yes.
But we also are aware that it's a bit of a fad for the moment. The what's really important is psychophysiology, not just the brain. It's the hormones, it's the stress circuit, it's the muscles, it's the breathing, it's the brains. And a lot of the studies which are being, you know, highlighted in neurosciences today will probably be heavily criticized by neurologists themselves in the next 10 to 20 years. So we're a bit prudent about how we should integrate that.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah, I definitely see that. What do you see as the ideal relationship between talk therapy and body psychotherapies? I don't know if that's too simple a question or too broad a question to comment on.
Well, my real hope is that in the future, all forms of psychotherapy will learn to situate the mind within the organism. so that what we're really talking of is different ways of accessing the mind of individuals or of interacting with the mind of individuals or different ways of expressing your experience. So in this sense, verbal or body techniques are for me, you know, equally useful. I don't find a conflict or polarity.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you have a lot of psychoanalysts who have been working with that in mind. For example, Ferenczi and Fenichel were working with such an intention in the 1920s in psychoanalysis and then in the 1930s. And today you have psychoanalysts like Dan Stern or Beatrice Beebe who refer to bodily dynamics. You have in France René Roussillon who uses a lot of body techniques in his thinking. In Europe, you have a whole psychoanalytical movement that uses relaxation techniques. So I think the blending is happening, but what you have to understand is that in science, time is very slow.
Mm-hmm.
It took 2 centuries for physicians to pass from Newton to nuclear physics and quantum physics. Psychology is only 100 years old. So actually we're just, I would say, in a presence of a creation of much more complex psychological theories in the future. And I don't think that in that future there'll be so much opposition between verbal and behavioral and cognitive and bodily techniques.
Yes, I have a sense that there's some kind of grand coming together, and that it makes less and less sense to talk about this school of work or that school of work. It feels like there's a kind of a synthesis emerging. Mm-hmm. Do you sense that at all?
Well, synthesis is maybe, it's a change of landscape, because there will always be different outlooks. There will always be different theories, because there's different ideologies, different patients, you know. We're all going to with each other. Disagree on different issues, complex issues.
I gather from what you said earlier, when you were a young guy and your psychoanalyst sent you off for some kind of body work, that you've been on the receiving end of one or more body therapies, and I'm wondering if you could share anything about your experience of those and what you felt the benefits were to you.
Well, I didn't really go there for psychopathology. So I went there, you know, as with sympathies for the humanistic movement and humanistic development. But I must say that what I discovered during doing these groups with, for example, Gerda Boysen, was that I experienced things I couldn't even have dreamt one could experience them. It's not very good English, but I hope it's the sort of the depth into which we were thrown by those exercises, the intensity of the emotions, of the images that entered my consciousness and that of most of my friends and colleagues was something totally unexpected and something that was never described in the psychological faculty I was going to.
Yes.
It was for me an extraordinary discovery of phenomena that Europeans at least would not take seriously.
And I gather that attitude is changing now, because I notice you're a member of something called the European Association of Body Psychotherapy. And I have to apologize for being a provincial American and not fully understanding just how much ferment is going on in Europe around these topics. How large an organization is the European Association of Body Psychotherapy?
Well, it has a bit more than 700 members.
Yeah.
And it groups quite a lot of body psychotherapy schools and trends. And it organizes Congress. It's now creating with the USABP, which is the U.S. Association of Body Psychotherapy, an international journal. And so it's, as I tell you, the field is exploding and growing.
Are you yourself a practitioner of body psychotherapy? And if so, what approach or approaches?
Well, I was trained in Gerda Boysen's body psychotherapy initially.
Now, can you spell that name for us? Because it's unfamiliar to me, and we may get this transcribed, and so that would be helpful.
It's in the book, by the way, for the spelling. It's B-O-Y-E-S-E-N.
Okay, Boysen, yeah.
And she's called Gerda, which is G-E-R-D-A.
Okay, thank you.
And her school is called Biodynamic Psychology.
And if I were a fly on the wall and you were practicing that approach, what would I see?
But one moment, the next thing is, I was trained in the 70s with that approach.
Okay.
So today I've evolved considerably. And for example, Gerda's approach was what I call an organismic approach. That is really approaching the whole organism as a totality and seeing how the organism self-regulates. I am more of a psychologist. That is, I'm more interested in how the organism and the mind interacts. And also in my practice, some people come for that sort of body work. But most people just, you know, find my name in the telephone book and come to me for standard psychotherapy. So with some people, the fly in the room would just see me doing a standard counseling. Except I'm, of course, very keenly aware of body dynamics that are occurring in the room, maybe more than verbal therapists who don't have my training. And others can see me doing massage and touching muscles and looking at how the muscle modifies a breathing pattern and then an emotional pattern and seeing how those three interact. Or I often teach relaxation techniques. And I ask people to accept their... a lot of people here in Switzerland are afraid of what I call body sensations, like tinglings, you know, things that sort of emerge in your body and one feels like one should want to scratch it so that it disappears as quickly as possible. And I noticed that not accepting those, what we call vegetative sensations, is a strong form of sexual repression, because you can't have a sexual relationship without having very strong vegetative reactions. And a lot of people who want to control their sexuality have sexual difficulties because their consciousness cannot integrate the fact that the body is sending a lot of messages to consciousness without asking consciousness for the permission. I don't know if that gives you an idea.
Yes, yes, it definitely does. And it raises for me the question, there are always sort of questions of ethical boundaries and legal boundaries when it comes to touching patients within a psychotherapeutic context. And so I'm wondering how those issues are being addressed in Switzerland and other European countries. If that's come up as an issue, I would think it would have.
Well, there's two levels to that. One is I'm a longstanding member of the ABP's ethical committee. So we've had long discussions on what's the ethics of touch in psychotherapy. And then there's another problem we have, issue we have is that our USA colleagues are so repressed at that level. That is, it's so often forbidden to touch if you're a psychologist, that the discussion in the States is very difficult. While in Europe, it's very simple. There is no problem. We're allowed to touch. It's better if we have trained in some body techniques so that we know what we're doing and that we have some knowledge in psychophysiology and anatomy. But there's no issue around touching or not touching in Europe.
Well, that's fascinating. And we do, in other ways, other arenas, we get the sense that somehow we're more prudish than Europeans are. Some people think this goes back to the origins of the country. I don't know, but I do know we have a lot more lawyers. That could have something to do with it.
Well, of course, if every time you touch, you can have a lawyer, then the whole aim of exploring the relation between mind and body becomes nearly impossible.
Yes.
And I know my U.S. colleagues have a lot of difficulties tackling that. And some U.S. psychotherapists, like Malcolm Brown, just emigrated to Europe so he could work in peace.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So where would you say is the energy or excitement in this field currently?
Well, I think I answered that question already. As a field, we're a baby learning to walk. And the excitement is the same as a baby of that age, 1 year or 2 years, mm-hmm. is discovering a whole realm of issues like the one we just discussed about can we touch or not, and what does it do to the mind if you touch with a lawyer behind or not with a lawyer behind. There's a whole complexity of issues that we're just beginning to discover. So we are really, using any form of knowledge that can help us.
Yes. I think one of the reasons people go to alternative complementary health practitioners is that in that context in this country, there can be touch, whether it's acupuncture or some specialized form of massage. And it not only feels good, but there's kind of a healing feeling about it and a great sense of relief that I at least experience when I contrast it to going to see my Western physician who's careful to keep great distance. I think touch is very important, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I know you have excellent massage methods in the States. I have great friends in Rolfing, which you mentioned. And the issue we're fighting for is some parts of the mind. This has been scientifically demonstrated even by Nobel Prize people. Some parts of the mind can't think without moving, can't think properly without being touched. And if you have massage techniques on one side and psychotherapy on the other side, this is a whole dimension of the human being that we cannot explore.
I used to be very active in hypnosis and hypnotherapy, and something that I never experimented with but always thought could be a fruitful area would be to combine hypnosis and massage. Do you know of anybody who's doing anything along those lines?
Well, not nominally, but I've heard of people doing that. Mm-hmm. Congresses and things like that, but I don't have, a name I can give you.
Yeah. So what would be your advice to any therapists or future therapists in training who are in our audience who might wish to move more in the direction of body psychotherapy?
Well, one thing, the first, of course, would be to read us and to meet us as colleagues, and so that psychotherapists who don't know of our work start to think themselves how in their own approach, in their own technique, they could be a bit more aware of how what they're working with is connected with movement, nonverbal communication, physiology, and so on. You have schools that are doing that, like Gestalt therapy or transactional therapy, have a lot of connections with body psychotherapists. Another thing, of course, is to experience on oneself in what way using body-mind approaches changes our way of thinking, because that's the big issue, is changing our way of thinking, changing our way of experiencing things. And of course, you can follow a simple meditation course, yoga course, Tai Chi course, or a lot of the body-mind techniques inspired by Gindler, which you find in California. But the thing is to experience in oneself why that form of work is relevant for a psychologist.
Well, that sounds like good advice. As we wind down, I wonder if there are any final points that you'd like to make.
Yes, maybe one last theoretical point on my model, which is that what I'm fighting most against is people who think there are direct connections between a body item and a mind item. There's, as you know, a lot of popular thinking that you can read a person's mind by reading their behavior. Like, for example, you had a television series called Lie to Me,
Yes, yes, based on the work of Paul Ekman, who I've also interviewed.
With whom I worked for many years. But I disagree totally with him when he says that this emotions mean, this expression on the face means that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fighting against theories that make direct links between body and mind, or people who assume that all hunchbacks have a crooked soul, or that a beautiful body must be the envelope of a beautiful soul, or things like that.
Yeah.
So the whole reason of using a systemic model for the body-mind issue is to show that the same facial expression, the same gesture, can connect itself in many different ways to different psychological dynamics.
Well, that reminds me of the danger of, say, taking a dream symbol and thinking that, oh, this element in the dream means that this very specific thing, this dream about a cigar, to use the famous example, is really talking about a penis.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly the same thing. And actually, in my book, I use that argument as well.
Okay.
I say dictionaries of the body or dictionaries of dreams are, they don't work.
Yes. Well, boy, there's just so much in your book, and of course we can't cover it all here, but Dr. Michael C. Heller, thanks for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
And thanks for having me on your radio, too.
I hope you found this overview of body psychotherapies with Michael C. Heller as informative and stimulating as I did. It's been many, many years since I taught a course at Sonoma State University, which I titled Psychology and the Body. Actually, it was during the time that we were discussing, and during the 70s when I invented that course, seeing that there were many threads pointing at an integration of what had for a long time in our culture been characterized as the mind-body split. I was influenced not only by yoga and meditation and Rolfing and biofeedback and other Neo-Reichian approaches, but also by the 1972 book Bodies in Revolt by Tom Hanna, who you will recall was the husband of my colleague Eleanor Criswell, whom I recently interviewed here on episode number 320. Now, some 40 years later, we have this very authoritative, encyclopedic textbook by Michael C. Heller, which not only documents the history of this field, but also places it on firm philosophical, theoretical, and scientific ground. I was not aware of the U.S. Association for Body Therapies, let alone the European one, so clearly there have been a lot of developments since that class that I taught so long ago. We live in an exciting time of integration within what has been a very splintered field of psychology. For anyone who is a body worker or a therapist integrating the body into their therapeutic practice, I would say that Dr. Heller's book would be an essential addition to their bookshelf. If you do decide to purchase the book, I hope you will order it using the Amazon widget in the right-hand sidebar on our site at shrinkwrapradio.com.
Can you imagine your world without Shrink Wrap Radio? If you've become addicted to the show and you need your Dr. Dave psychology fix on a regular basis, then you have to, need to, got to go to the website and click on the big green donate button. The more you donate, the better you'll feel. It's easy and gratification is instant.
Thank you, Sister Sherry, for your heartfelt support. And thanks to all of you who either are or will help to support Shrink Wrap Radio by clicking on that big green donate button on our site. How about if we give some money back to you? Well, at least indirectly. You'll find a link in the right-hand sidebar that says, click here to earn money taking online surveys. That will connect you to a company called Survey Savvy. they conduct lots of surveys, and they do pay you for taking surveys, and in turn, they pay us a small stipend for referring you. So that's a way you can both support yourself and us. It's what we call a win-win. And it's something that I happen to know about because, as you may know, I also do market research. That is, when I can get the work, which right now is not very much. I'm very happy to announce that we now have yet another continuing education course on Jungian psychotherapy. It's the fifth one in the series. It's a 7-unit course consisting of 8 of my interviews with leading Jung scholars, analysts, and therapists. It's titled Myth, Story, and Synchronicity, and the cost is only $69, which is just under $10 a unit. Or you can take all 5 of my Jung courses for a total of 33 units and a package price of $199, which brings it down to $6 a unit. Plus, you get a certificate of completion. Now, these courses are approved by the American Psychological Association, so they're approved for psychologists, social workers, counselors, nurses, and more. Professionals, as you may know, are required to periodically earn continuing education, or what we call CE units. However, we also find some non-professionals, students or paraprofessionals of various sorts, like to earn these certificates to frame and hang on their wall, or to beef up their resume, or to bolster a grad school application. So I hope you'll give it some thought. And of course, you can bet I'm already working on a Jung 6. However, first, I'll put together another one on the body, including interviews such as the one you've heard today. You'll find full information and links to the courses by mousing over the store tab on our site. Now, if you're a new listener, you might not be aware that we also have an app for both iOS devices, such as the iPhone, and for Android devices. Just go to the Apps tab on our site for full details on where to find them. I hope you all got to see our first newsletter, which we produced jointly with the Jung platform. If you didn't get it, you're probably not on our mailing list. You can get on our mailing list by going on the website, and you'll see a sign-up spot in the upper left-hand corner of the page. Sign up, and you'll also get a free link to a Dream Talk that I gave some years back. Speaking of Dream Talks, I'd love to give a weekend dream workshop in your area. There's a link in the right-hand sidebar that says, Weekend Dr. Dave Dream Workshop in your area? Question mark. Just click on that if you're interested in that option.
Hi, this is Jungian analyst Tom Elsner, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Tom Elsner, who will be my next guest, but more about that later. First, let's dip into the email bag for some recent correspondence from our Shrink Wrap Radio listener community. First, we hear from Tony, who writes, I thought the psychology of cybersexuality episode was interesting. It's rare to hear insightful information on sexuality. The topic of sex can be so entangled with regional culture, religion, and emotion that it can be hard to see the full picture. Thanks for the podcast series. And then Tony subsequently sent me another email saying, I just listened to Understanding How Good People Turn Evil, and it was very touching and relevant to me, especially your commentary and sharing on Zimbardo's 10 steps of resistance to influence. I used to look at your podcast as a nifty way to get information, but now it's much more important and meaningful to me as you are actually helping me with my problems. I want to thank you so much for sharing psychology and your insights. And again, that's from Tony. And Tony, thank you so much for taking time to write and also for letting me know that you're finding these podcast interviews to be helpful in your own personal life. That's really one of the things that I really hope for, even though I don't spend any time, quotes, giving advice or, you know, being that kind of a media psychology. And yet I'm hoping that there is an underlying spirit of helpfulness and hopefulness that comes through. Here's a thoughtful response to my most recent interview with Monica Wickman, posted in the comments area by listener Richard Powell. And he writes, "The way Dr. Monica Wickman covered so much ground with clarity and infectious energy was a true pleasure, but I have to say I had a hard time with the astrology part. I am assuming she was speaking of it in the same way we've come to understand alchemy, as a metaphor, or another way to access archetypal images. But some of what she said leads me to suspect she sees more going on than that. There were several synchronistic moments for me listening to this episode. Last night I saw the documentary I Am, and yesterday I listened to the Long Now podcast featuring Susan Frankel talking about the problem and wonder of plastic. At the end of the talk, Stuart Brand asked about sequestering carbon in the manufacture of plastic. An interesting idea. I doubt we will stop using plastic, and it sounds like plastic manufacturers are looking at new ways to make it without petroleum. So dealing with the recycling and sequestering of it really should be a high priority for us. It's interesting that the I Am documentary featured both the HeartMath folks and the Noetic Institute folks, but no one from a more mainstream organization. It's so hard to believe that yogurt can respond to our emotions." I know what you mean, Richard. He goes on to say, "I guess I'm struggling with the old idealist, i.e. mind is the real stuff, versus materialist, i.e. matter is the real stuff, debate. And so far, I haven't heard enough evidence to sway me to the idealist side. Looking forward to hearing more from Monica in the future. And maybe when she is on again, she could clarify her understanding of astrology and how it fits or doesn't fit with a scientific worldview." And that's from Richard Powell, whom you will recall I read a letter from recently, a very long and to me meaningful one. And Richard himself is an author. So it's good to hear from you again, Richard. You make some good points and raise some good questions there. Next, we hear from Suzanne, a former student of mine, and she writes, "Dr. Van Nuys, as a former student of yours, it was fascinating to hear your personal history, especially the role synchronicity played in how you arrived at Sonoma State University and how you found your birth father. The Hotai story was impactful. Thank you for being open to that personal interview. I have heard your other posts on synchronicity and hope you continue to explore that subject. I do not agree with the one posted, number 311, comments by John Danzer, that synchronicity is just luck. On another topic, have you heard of Claire Cooper Marcus and her book, Houses as a Mirror of Self? I think she would be an interesting interview. She's a retired UC Berkeley professor of architecture. Her research was inspired by Jung. It is a synopsis of interviews of people, homeless to wealthy, and their history of home, feelings about where they live, how they have lived, and how it reflects their inner and outer life. It has been an inspiration to me, and I wanted to mention it to you. Thank you. Regards, Suzanne." Thank you for that recommendation, Suzanne, and I definitely will keep the interviews on synchronicity coming because I find it so fascinating and so universal. Finally, we hear from Graziana in response to my thanks for her donation, and she writes, "Thanks for that, Dr. Dave. I have a journey into work of about an hour, and your podcasts have made light work of it for about 3 months now. I'm delighting in imbibing your food for the psyche/soul, and am now just wondering, given psyche was also a butterfly, is this also paradoxically butterfly food?" Paradoxical because they do not eat, of course. ? "I've been telling my therapy and teaching colleagues in New Zealand and the UK how wide-ranging and interesting and up-to-date your interviews are, and heartily agree. You are a great interviewer, a model facilitator of engaged conversation, demonstrating respect, curiosity, intelligent exploration, inclusion of self, and of core values and interests that I share. Jung, humanism, neuropsychology, integration, mindfulness, critique of psychopathology, embodiedness, and others. Even bought one of your t-shirts to show my support of your work and hopefully create some interest. Glad you have some New Zealand contacts, and if you are ever in Northland and Te Tai Tokaru, it would be lovely to meet up. So please keep this excellent service going. And she signs it, Arohanui Graziana. And I assume those are Maori words there that I don't know how to pronounce. But, you know, I feel so seen by you, Graziana, in your description of me as a model facilitator of engaged conversation, demonstrating respect, curiosity, intelligent exploration, inclusion of self, and of course, values and interests in Jung, humanism, neuropsychology, integration, mindfulness, critique of psychopathology, embodiedness, and others. That would be my elevator speech. I really feel seen. Thanks so much for that. And thanks for buying the t-shirt. I don't think anybody's bought one of those t-shirts in years. I wasn't even sure that I still had that ad on the site. Yes, everybody, go out and buy a t-shirt that's got the Shrink Wrap Radio logo on it, and let's help get the word out to the rest of the world via t-shirts. So with that, I think we better wrap it up. As always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio. In addition to emails, you can leave comments, just like Richard did, about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. And of course, you can use our apps, the iPhone and the Android app, about which you can find full details in the Apps tab on our site. Thanks to today's guest, Dr. Michael C. Heller, for his comprehensive overview of body psychotherapies. My next guest will be Jungian analyst Tom Elsner, whom you may recall was on the show previously speaking about the Jungian interpretation of fairy tales. In this next visit, we'll be discussing Jung and politics, which seems particularly timely given the election we just went through here in the U.S. So until then, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.